righty, hello again, everyone, and welcome to it, the Daily Caller podcast for the 23rd of May, 2019. I am Derek Hunter. I am your host. Welcome to it. Email me, Derek at dailycaller.com. Send me all your curse words and all your spite. I'll take it. I love it. Or your compliments. I'll like them, too. You can send me whatever you like. I'll usually respond. Unless you really get all sweary and racist, and then you're just unhinged, and then I won't. Also, thank you for sharing this show and telling a friend. Look, a lot of people are going to be going out of town for Memorial Day. Give them something to listen to. Grab their phones. Subscribe to the podcast for them. They'll thank you for it. And if they don't like it, I will refund double their money because it doesn't cost you a damn thing. So much to get to. So much going on. Just a programming note on Friday, which is tomorrow for those of you playing the home game, as you go out of town or as you plan, because you notice gas prices went up by about 30 cents yesterday. Kind of interesting. I talked to my dad, and he's like, the day before it was $2.70 a gallon, then it was $2.99 a gallon. Like, yep, that's what they do. As you're getting ready to do something this weekend with the three-day weekend, if you're lucky enough to have that Monday off, I suspect it will have something to do with a flame of some sort, be it created by propane or radiated from charcoal. You will likely be involved in grilling. Hopefully you'll be involved in grilling, because damn, grilling is good. So along those lines, and since we don't just do politics here on the program, the Friday interview is going to be with a really good friend of mine, Heath Hall. We used to do a podcast together 10 years ago before even iTunes, I think, was having podcasts, or we couldn't figure out how to put it up on iTunes, for a happy hour that I started in Washington, D.C. a lifetime ago. And he is also the best damn griller I've ever had the pleasure of consuming his food. And it's not just me. He's won many grilling competitions around the country. He's left politics, lucky him. He's now the CEO of the Kansas City Barbecue Association, which is the largest barbecue organization in the world. And Lord knows that they don't mess around with their barbecue out there in Missouri. So we're going to give you tips and tricks and best practices for cooking chicken and pork and ribs and steaks and burgers, whatever you want. And it will have the charcoal versus propane argument, plus there are new pellet grills out there, and Heath is a big proponent of that. Heath has also been on Shark Tank 3 times. He was on, I think, the 3rd episode. He's definitely on in the first season, because I remember I was on it in the background, and you couldn't really see me, but they came to his house and filmed him. He also is the president of a company called Pork Barrel Barbecue, which, if it is available in your grocery store, their sauce, especially I like the sweet sauce, but they're all damn good, and their spice rub is excellent. They actually got an investment from Barbara Corcoran on Shark Tank. They were one of the first success stories, and they were on 2 more times in follow-up segments because they opened restaurants and everything. He's become a big muckety muck, all because he knows his way around a kitchen and, more importantly, around a grill. So I talked to him yesterday for about a half an hour. So all your grilling tips and everything like that, because I think I'm pretty good on a grill, but I still have some issues with, dry chicken or pork. Well, I shouldn't have that problem anymore, and you won't either if you listen to tomorrow's program, at least the second half of it. As I say, we're more than politics here, so make sure you give that a listen, and even if your liberal friends are carnivores, which maybe some of them aren't, they'll find something to enjoy in tomorrow's program as well. All right, let's get into it. There was a big walkout in Washington, D.C. yesterday. It was the walkout heard round the world. The President of the United States stood up for himself, and somehow this is, of course, according to the liberal media, an affront to our democracy yet again. Donald Trump is turning into a tyrant. He says he's not going to work with Democrats unless they drop all this investigation crap. They don't get a do-over, and he's just trying to hide. It's not a threat to our democracy. The president actually has a very good point. Democrats, up until the point that the Mueller report was out, were telling us we have to wait for the Mueller report to come out. We're going to see that Mueller report. Oh, boy, howdy, when we see that Mueller report. Every time somebody was calling for impeachment, with the exception of insane Maxine Waters, who has Tourette's when it comes to the impeachment word, we're saying, you know, we got to see what Mueller report. Once the Mueller report comes out, then we'll know what the president did. We'll know what him and Vladimir Putin plotted and figured out and how Donald Trump stole the election. And then the Mueller report came out and there was no collusion and there was no obstruction of justice. And Democrats, they took about 3 days off and said, oh, man, I guess we've got to move on. Remember, there were a couple of Democrats talking about we've got to move on or we're going to investigate other things. And suddenly they realized that they don't really have anything else. They're not bringing anything to the table, these Democrats. So they went back to the well, and they're still saying just because Mueller didn't find anything doesn't mean there isn't anything to find. We must conduct our own investigation again. Well, it was all the rage. It was the solution. It was the cure for what ailed them until they got what they didn't want, which was essentially exoneration, especially on the collusion issue, on the obstruction of justice issue, which we covered yesterday and covered in the past. It was a matter of Robert Mueller saying, well, I'm not going to make a decision on this one. I'll leave it to the Attorney General. And the Attorney General convened his powwow of advisors, including many people who are not fans of the president. And they said, yeah, no, there's no obstruction of justice either, because sending complaining tweets about Robert Mueller and ordering his firing, but then not actually doing it, is not obstruction of justice. Well, Democrats don't accept that. They can't accept that because they don't have anything else. They're bringing nothing else to the table. They've overpromised and underdelivered their rabid base. They spent 2 years keeping their rabid lunatic fringe. It's not even a fringe anymore. It's the whole damn Afghan. But their rabid lunatic fringe on edge, convincing them that, you know, Adolf Hitler reincarnated now resides at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue, convinced them that Donald Trump was a puppet for Vladimir Putin. But don't worry, they're going to get him. Robert Mueller's going to get him, and then Congress will swoop in and impeach everybody. That was what they promised their base, and Robert Mueller found the exact opposite. So that left them hanging. So they've decided to go back to the well. Since so many people still believe, especially, and by so many people, I mean so many Democrats, still believe that there was Russian collusion and that Donald Trump obstructed justice, Democrats saw no problem with going back to the well. There's no real downside for them with their core supporters. So it keeps them riled up. It keeps them angry. It prevents them from thinking, although most of them are incapable of it in the first place, because their emotions are overriding their little bit of logic that they have. So you end up with a situation that they are now saying that Congress must continue to investigate that which was just investigated for 2 years with no restrictions and zero claims of executive privilege. That last part, the zero claims of executive privilege, is important because yesterday morning, there was a meeting scheduled at the White House at 11 a.m. between congressional leadership and the President of the United States to talk about infrastructure. Remember, Democrats care deeply about infrastructure, or so they say. They had agreed not more than a month ago on a number of $2 trillion over 10 years. Chuck Schumer was very excited at the prospect. $2 trillion over 10 years. Democrats love spending money. So do Republicans. It was going to give every member of Congress a chance to bring home a nice big slab of bacon to their district and claim that they're doing something. We see that bridge that was collapsing? It's no longer collapsing. I've saved the world. Reelect me. That sort of crap. Well, before that meeting, the Democrats led by the lunatic fringe in the party that are very upset and really sort of believed their own press releases. They also happen to be safe. You know, they're not going to face any re-election problems themselves. They want impeachment. The grumblings were getting louder and louder, and more people were joining their ranks saying, impeachment, impeachment, impeachment. So Nancy Pelosi organized a Democratic caucus meeting so they could come up with some kind of strategy on going forward. She claims she's not for impeachment, but she wants to not lose the support of those people who are in favor of impeachment while placating the rest of the people. After that meeting, the strategy meeting on how to remove Donald Trump from office, I imagine it was mostly about we've got to find something that he did that warrants removing him from office, because there isn't anything. Mean tweets is not grounds for impeachment. After that, Nancy Pelosi came out and accused the president of the United States of being involved in a cover-up. Curiously, after this audio that I'm going to play you, after she says this, she walks away. Now, why is that important? After her statement, she says this, and then she walks away from the reporters. Why is it important that she walks away from the reporters? Why do I note it? Because what's missing from what she's saying here is what the president is covering up. She says the president's involved in a cover-up, but she doesn't say what. The reason she doesn't say what is because there is no what. He's not covering up anything. Well, before we continue, let's listen to Nancy Pelosi garble her way through this statement to reporters after a meeting with the Democratic caucus and prior to her meeting at the White House.
It was a very positive meeting, a respectful sharing of ideas, and I think a very impressive presentation by our chairs. We do believe that it's important for to follow the facts. We believe that no one is above the law, including the President of the United States, and we believe that the President of the United States is engaged in a cover-up, and that was the nature of the meeting.
And then she walked away from the press without clarifying a cover-up of what? That's the question, a cover-up of what? This, of course, the way that Nancy handled it, allowed Democrats and their allies in the media, their fellow travelers in the media, to go around and say he's covering up obstruction of justice. He's, by refusing to turn over everything he's ever done, every piece of paper he's ever touched, every girl he's ever kissed, every dollar he's ever made to congressional investigators, he is trying to cover up obstruction of justice. But there was no obstruction of justice. How do you cover up something that did not happen? If Robert Mueller found obstruction of justice, he would have said, hey, here's obstruction of justice. Instead, he found things that he said, these could be obstruction, but it's not a strong enough case for us to make, so we'll leave it up to the Attorney General to figure out. The Attorney General looked at it with his staff, and they said, no, not obstruction of justice. And they all moved on. Now Democrats are saying he's trying to cover that up, as if a prosecutor with subpoena power, the ability to imprison people, the ability to ruin lives, did not do his due diligence when it came to obstruction of justice. Mueller went on for 2 years, almost 22 months, 2 months shy of 2 years, and found nothing that he could charge on the issue of obstruction of justice. And Robert Mueller was not shy about charging people with all sorts of things, unrelated, by the way, to the initial Russia investigation. And yet he found nothing. He didn't come back. There was nothing that said, you know what, there's a ticking clock on the wall. It's counting down. We really have to wrap this thing up because we're running out of time. No, Robert Mueller could have investigated until the end of time, if he so choose, if he thought there was more information out there that he simply was not getting his hands on, he could have kept going. He could have kept digging. He could have kept fighting. He was satisfied, and he ended the investigation. Democrats now say, well, we have to go further than the Mueller report did. Well, these congressional Democrats, these members of Congress, are not prosecutors, even if some of them were in a past life. That is irrelevant. They have oversight. They do not have prosecutorial duties. If a professional team of prosecutors did everything they could to try to get the president of the United States on anything they could, and they came up with the donut, that leads you to believe that Democrats aren't necessarily going for the same prize. We know they're not going for the same prize. They're going for 2020. That is their prize. That is their finish line. That is their next and really only goal. They need to keep this conspiracy theory alive. And they have very fertile minds out there. And they're fertile because they're so fertilized with all the BS sprinkled into it by the likes of CNN and MSNBC. They have these fertile minds that they need to keep these conspiracies growing in. So they can throw out ambiguous things like this. They can launch investigations into anything they want. We need to see 10 years of Donald Trump's tax returns. Why? Are you legislating anything on that? No, we're not. We have oversight responsibilities, they say. It's our constitutional duty to conduct oversight. Yes, it is. Over official duties of the government, over official acts that the executive branch is taking, not just want to see what's going on. You don't get to do that. They always say, we're a co-equal branch of government. Yes, you are a co-equal branch of government. That means that you are not more powerful than the presidency. You are on equal footing. If you want to know how the president of the United States is enacting a particular piece of legislation or how the administration came to a particular decision on implementation or repeal of something, then you do have oversight. You do have the authority. If you want to crawl up the colon of everything Donald Trump ever did in the hopes that you can find something either illegal or, more importantly, embarrassing, because that's all they'd find, because if there was something in his tax returns that was illegal, the IRS that audits him every year would surely have found it and charged him with something long before he became president. And whoever did it now in the IRS would again be lauded as a hero by the left. Well, Congress, you don't have that power. You do not have the ability to say, hey, you know what? We want access to every email you've ever sent so we can find out if you've said anything embarrassing or illegal in there, and maybe we can use it against you in a future political campaign. That's not how congressional oversight works. At least it used to not be. Now it's fair game. It's open to everything. They don't actually all believe that they're really investigating a crime. They believe and they know that they're investigating to find out if they can find a crime, which is horribly un-American. And again, I'm watching this Chernobyl thing, this miniseries on HBO. It's excellent. It's awesome. If you want to see what life was like in a totalitarian state, watch this. It is a whole bunch of people who are essentially property of the state. They are slaves. They are owned by the state. And even as their world is crumbling around them and they are being poisoned with radiation from the explosion at the Chernobyl nuclear power plant, they are still more afraid of what the state will do to them than what the radiation will do to them. And so they do things that will kill them, unambiguously kill them, because if they don't, they're going to be told on to the state by their supervisors, their watchers, their handlers, whatever it is. It's a sickness, and that is the left. They should all be forced to speak with German accents. We would like to see your tax returns, Mr. Trump. We must see if there is anything that maybe you have done that is illegal. And by the way, the Führer would like a word with you. You should be in Nancy Pelosi's office at noon sharp, not 12:01, not 11:59, but noon sharp. Sehr gut sein. This is where they are. To illustrate how irrational these Democrats are, before we even get to the president's response, my friend Carrie Pickett, who works for Sirius XM, and I've known her for years. She's one of my wife's best friends. She was in our wedding. She tracked down Congressman Steve Cohen. Now, Congressman Steve Cohen accused the president of raping the Constitution. He's a nut job. He is, again, one of those Democrats who are safe. And she asked him about the differences between what Democrats are trying to do now and what the Republicans tried to do under Barack Obama. Again, this clip ends with him storming off. He yells at Kerry, if you want to go to law, I'm not going to get into a legal debate with you. You want to go to law school? Go to law school. Which is indication that he doesn't really have an answer. Democrats just walk away when they don't have an answer. A Republican tries to walk away when they don't have an answer, and the press follows them, hounds them, waits outside their office, follows them home. When a Democrat doesn't have an answer, Democrats just, journalists say, oh, okay, moving on. This is Congressman Steve Cohen yesterday in the hallways of Capitol Hill.
Congressman, just I'm curious. I know that you want impeachment, but I just want to understand.
Who are you?
I'm sorry, SiriusXM. I'm just curious, though. As far as I know that Democrats look at this as obstruction of justice, as the crime itself, but what exactly is the underlying crime?
There doesn't need to be an underlying crime. That's a very special interpretation of the law by Bill Barr that he did particularly for Donald Trump, but he probably had it before, but it's a very minority opinion. There doesn't need to be an underlying crime to commit obstruction of justice. I think the Mueller report pretty much lays that out, but the law lays it out.
So then what exactly is the president obstructing?
He was trying to obstruct the investigation. He tried to obstruct Congress's oversight. Right now, it's pretty clear.
So then, couldn't Republicans have made the same argument about Eric Holder during Fast and Furious? Or
I think they did.
And so they could have impeached Barack Obama during the period.
I'm not going to get into a legal discussion with you. You want to go to law school? Go to law school.
See, they don't want to have a discussion about these issues. Eric Holder refused to turn over documents that were lawfully subpoenaed. And then at the 11th hour, finally at the end of the whole process, after being held in contempt, President Obama said, I'm exerting executive privilege there. Now stop it. Now move along. Well, that could be obstruction of justice. It sure as hell was an obstruction of an investigation. We still don't know who ordered Fast and Furious, who created it, who said don't tell the Mexican government that we're sending a whole bunch of cartel gun traffickers with automatic weapons, semi-automatic weapons, down to Mexico. Don't tell anybody that. And they didn't track those guns. If you screw up that big, you should know who did it. If only to find out ways to make sure it never happens again, to find out where the chain of command broke down. But Democrats did not want that, probably because that chain of command's final link resided in the Oval Office, or at least with the Attorney General, President Obama's wingman, as Eric Holder said. But no. So Democrats are now saying the obstruction that Donald Trump is doing of justice is the investigation in Congress. That is not obstruction of justice, by the way. Justice occurs in the justice system, not in the halls of Congress. You can obstruct Congress, you can be in contempt of Congress, but you can't really obstruct justice in Congress. The president cooperated fully and completely with the Mueller investigation, never once exerting executive privilege. Kind of important to know. Robert Mueller got to talk to everybody he wanted to talk to for as long as he wanted to talk to them, with the exception of the President of the United States, from whom he got written answers to the questions he submitted. If he didn't think that was enough, he should have pursued another avenue. Yet he didn't. Therefore, one must assume that he thought that was enough. Again, Don McGahn, chief counsel, president's chief counsel, 30 hours of testimony to Robert Mueller, 30 hours of testimony before the grand jury and talking to Robert Mueller's investigators. Would 31 hours have been a deal breaker or a difference maker? No, of course not. But Democrats want to talk to him now, not because they think he'll say anything new. He won't say anything new. They want him to testify before Congress in public because they want video of him saying the things he told Robert Mueller and his investigators, because that they think would help them politically in 2020. Congress cannot charge anybody with a crime. You cannot obstruct justice in Congress. So Steve King, or Steve Cohen right there, is talking about, he's obstructing justice by obstructing congressional investigators. Congressional investigators do not dispense justice. So you can't obstruct justice. See how that works? But they're not letting the facts stand in the way of a good story. And by, Kerry was absolutely right, by their own measure, by their own standards, Barack Obama could have been impeached because of the actions of Eric Holder and refusing to turn over documents. But Steve Cohen doesn't want to have that conversation. He tucked his tail between his legs and ran away from the mean girl asking him serious questions. See, Democrats aren't used to that. They don't live in that world. They don't roll in that world, especially New York Democrats. What, ever seen a Democrat confronted by a reporter from the Washington Post or the New York Times? Have you ever seen a Democrat cornered by an anchor on CNN or MSNBC? Of course you haven't. Never. Doesn't happen. That world does not exist. So when those people are caught outside their little bubble, their little comfort zone, they don't know how to handle it. As soon as Steve Cohen caught a whiff of a serious question and a charge of hypocrisy, they were done. He was gone. He left. You want to go to law school? Go to law school. I'm out of here. I don't have time to explain it to you. Which is code for, hell, I don't know. Leave me alone. You're not supposed to question me. Now, after Nancy Pelosi's little powwow with Democrats, where they smoke 'em peace pipe and decided on a strategy, which is the fact or the idea, that the talking point, that Donald Trump is engaged in a cover-up without naming what he's covering up. Miraculously, that became the buzzword of the day. Journalists around the televisions started talking about the president's engaged in a cover-up. Democrats, president's engaged in a cover-up. Well, seeing this, the president of the United States about to go into a meeting with Nancy Pelosi, he went into the meeting with Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. It started and it ended about 5 minutes later, where the president stood up and basically told everybody to go F themselves. If you people aren't going to take your job seriously, then I'm not going to waste my time talking to you, which I thought was absolutely brilliant. I only wish that there had been cameras in the room. The president sometimes invites cameras in the room to the beginning of meetings. I would love to have seen that moment where he says, you guys aren't serious. You're not worth talking to. Call me if you ever decide to get serious. Otherwise, go take a long walk on a short bridge. Then the president walked out to the Rose Garden and gathered the press. And he started a very long statement. I'm not going to play all of it, but here's one clip. The president basically laying out why he told Nancy Pelosi she can go chase herself.
So I came here to do a meeting on infrastructure with Democrats. Not really thinking they wanted to do infrastructure or anything else other than investigate. And I just saw that Nancy Pelosi, just before our meeting, made a statement that we believe that the president of the United States is engaged in a cover-up. Well, it turns out I'm the most, and I think most of you would agree to this, I'm the most transparent president probably in the history of this country. We have given, on a witch hunt, on a hoax. The whole thing with Russia was a hoax as it relates to the Trump administration and myself. It was a total horrible thing that happened to our country. It hurt us in so many ways.
He's just throwing it down out there. Screw you guys. I'm going home. He pulled an Eric Cartman. I'm not going to deal with you people. If this, you're going to stab me in the back and then walk in and pretend that you want to be serious about getting something done for the American people, because you clearly don't want to get something done for the American people. And they clearly don't. they don't want to do anything that Donald Trump will sign that will be seen as a victory. Oh, minor things they'll pass, absolute requirements they'll take care of, everything else they're going to block. The new trade agreement between the U.S., Canada, and Mexico, Nancy Pelosi has said, not going to vote on it. Not going to vote on it till after the election. Not going to vote on a trade deal that would benefit Americans. No, why? Of course, you're not hearing about this on the nightly news because, again, it makes Democrats look petty and bad because, well, they're petty and bad. But she's not going to hold a vote on it because she can get away with that. The Speaker of the House is all powerful, and power corrupts absolutely. And when it comes to infrastructure, the Democrats were never going to do that because every member of Congress that could go back to their district and say, I am responsible for the widening of this road that's going to end congestion, or we're going to replace that crumbling bridge, or whatever it is that in their particular district they were going to get out of that $2 trillion pie would also be able to be claimed by Donald Trump. You've got beautiful new roads here. You're welcome. You can see that speech happening. Democrats can't allow Donald Trump to do that. No matter how much it would help them individually, it would help the president nationally. And they're not about to do anything for that. So if the roads have to crumble next time you get a flat tire or bend your rim or your axle because you hit a giant pothole or you hear of a crumbling bridge somewhere, know that Democrats could have done something about that. The president was willing to spend way more than is necessary to get something done. But Democrats said, no, we cannot give the president of the United States any kind of victory on which he can run for re-election. So that's why it didn't happen. So the president was right to basically walk in, flip them the bird, tell them to go sit on a stick and walk out and say, get out of my house. But the president wasn't done. This clip is fairly long. I thought about cutting it up into like four or five clips. But the president is the best defender of the president for the most part. So I just want you to hear him in his own words, because most people only saw a 15 or 20 second clip selected by some journalist somewhere. So it probably wasn't the best clip. And I want you to hear the case that the president lays out to the American people in his own words about how Democrats really don't give a damn. They are about one thing and one thing only, and that is getting Donald Trump or harming him and preventing him from being reelected.
Things are going well, and I said, let's have the meeting on infrastructure. We'll get that done easily. That's one of the easy ones. And instead of walking in happily into a meeting, I walk in, look at people that had just said that I was doing a cover-up. I don't do cover-ups. You people know that probably better than anybody. And I was just looking at a list of some of the things that we just did. More than 2,500 subpoenas qualified for. And I let everybody talk. I let the White House counsel speak for 30 hours. 30 hours. I have 19 special counsel lawyers, 40 FBI agents. I said, open it all up. Let them have whatever they want. Nearly 500 search warrants. Think of that, a search warrant. Did you ever see a search warrant before? Neither did I. This was over 500 search warrants. And of the 19 people that were heading up this investigation, or whatever you want to call it, with Bob Mueller, they were contributors to the Democrat Party, most of them, and to Hillary Clinton. They hated President Trump. They hated him with a passion. They went to her big party after the election that turned out to be a wake, not a party. It was a wake. And they were very angry. These are the people that after 2 years and $40 million or $35 million, it'll end up being a lot more than that by the time all the bills are paid. This is what happened. No collusion, no obstruction, no nothing. They issued 50 orders authorizing use of pen registers. Think of that, though. 500 witnesses. And then I have Nancy Pelosi go out and say that the president of the United States engaged in a cover-up. Now, we've had a House investigation. We have Senate investigations. We have investigations like nobody's ever had before, and there's nothing, we did nothing wrong. They would have loved to have said we colluded. They would have loved it. These people were out to get us. The Republican Party and President Trump, they were out to get us. This was a one-sided, horrible thing. The bottom line is they said there's no collusion, no collusion with Russia. You heard so much talk about phone calls that my son made to me from this meeting that was set up by GPS Fusion, it looks like, which is the outside for those that don't know. And for a year, I heard about phone calls went to a special number, unauthorized. And it would have been my son, Don, who's a good young man, who's gone through hell. And they were calls that must have been made by him before and after the meeting, three calls. After massive study and work, they actually found who made the calls. One was a friend of ours, a real estate developer. Great guy. Most of you know him. Nice guy. Loves our country. And the other one was the head of NASCAR. Two of them.
What the president is referring to there at the end is a story that had been circulating amongst the conspiracy nuts on the left on cable news about the, as they call it, the infamous Trump Tower meeting, which was with the Veletsnetskaya, or whatever the hell her name was, the Russian alleged agent who was in cahoots, by the way, with Fusion GPS and went to Fusion GPS after the meeting. Fusion GPS, Democratic fix-it firm, dirty tricks firm in politics. Kind of weird. This woman contacts the Trump campaign out of the blue, sets up a meeting with the Trump campaign, then goes right over to Fusion GPS. Smell a little bit fishy to anybody? Well, Veselnitskaya, I think is her last name. I think her first name is Svetlana. Before the meeting and after the meeting, phone records for Donald Trump Jr.'s cell phone indicated that he had made a call just before the meeting and a couple of calls after the meeting to a restricted phone number, meaning one that wasn't readily available. You know, if you dial *67, your phone number will not show, and then you dial whatever number you want to call, even from your cell phone, it will block your number from coming up on their caller ID. It'll say unknown caller or something like that. They thought for sure, and it was reported as fact, I believe, by McClatchy. It might have been some other organization, but it was repeated by, you know, one organization reports it, and then every other CNN, MSNBC, New York Times, they all repeat it, saying, oh, these numbers probably calls to Donald Trump. It was probably the son calling the father before the meeting saying, we're going into the meeting and we're going to get our marching orders from Vladimir Putin. And then after the meeting, it was, we just came out of the meeting and we've got our marching orders from Vladimir Putin now. We know what to do. That was reported as fact. And repeated. CNN said, so-and-so news organization is reporting. And then they say, well, CNN has not independently verified this, but it doesn't matter. They just repeated the lie. They repeated the unverified story. And then they throw in at the end, we haven't verified this, but it's out there. And that's all they cared about, is getting it out there. For more than a year, this was reported as one of the potential smoking guns. Donald Trump knew about this meeting in Trump Tower, and it was so important that he talked to his son before and after, and he desperately wanted to know what information was coming from Moscow. Well, the Mueller investigation, and this was not made a big deal during the Mueller report's release, because it really makes Democrats look stupid and foolish and shows how big of a fraud this whole thing was. But in the Mueller report, casually mentioned is the fact that those calls, they discovered who those calls were to. the people that Donald Trump just referenced there, that it was someone who works in real estate and the head of NASCAR. Donald Trump Jr. was going about his business the way he would any other day. It was all a lie. There was no quick duck out to call Trump and say, man, we got the dirt. We now have our marching orders from Vladimir Putin. Nope. A total and complete bald-faced lie. That's what the president's talking about there. You need to know about that. It's important. So the president basically told them all to get bent, which I think is brilliant. Tell them all to get bent. The media doesn't want people to know any of this stuff. That's why you didn't see that clip on your nightly news. And that's why I played such a long clip for you, because I think the president lays it out pretty well there. So as we go into 2020, expect more of this crap. This is where Democrats are going to live because they've got nothing else to offer. Speaking of Democrats offering things, this was kind of funny. And it's almost to the point that I'm starting to feel bad for poor Beto because he's not having a good go of it. He did a town hall on CNN the other day. And I'm an avid consumer of social media. It's where I do a lot of show prep. It's where you can't watch everything. You shouldn't watch everything. You should go out and have a life. But on, I think it was Monday night, maybe it was Tuesday night. See, I don't even know which night it was. Beto O'Rourke had his big moment in the sun. Every Democrat gets a town hall on CNN. Sometimes they get multiple town halls on CNN. I think Bernie Sanders has already had two of them. And in his town hall, there was literally no news to come out of it. Beto O'Rourke has become such an afterthought after being a top-tier candidate. Remember, he was the golden boy, the ABC News reporter running around saying, "You're a rock star, Beto. Oh my God, they love you." He had set the single-day fundraising record when he officially announced his campaign, only to have it beaten by Joe Biden by a few hundred thousand dollars, which isn't a whole lot in the grand scheme of things. And you would expect Joe Biden to have a pretty good day because there are a whole bunch of big money Democrats out there ready to give him money. Well, Beto O'Rourke's town hall was the lowest rated town hall that has happened so far. So far, Washington Examiner has the story. Presidential candidate Beto O'Rourke is not only starting to appear toward the bottom of the polls, but his Tuesday televised town hall with CNN holds the distinction of being one of the lowest rated on the network. O'Rourke's town hall averaged 714,000 viewers and 194,000 in the 25 to 54 demo. Remember, that was supposed to be Beto's wheelhouse. He was wildly popular with the young, uneducated hipster douchebag set, which means he came in third in both categories from the 10 o'clock to 11:15 p.m., according to early Nielsen research. What's shocking, 714,000 total viewers. Don't get me wrong. I would love for this show to be downloaded on a daily basis by 714,000. I'd even settle for 700,000. We'll just call it an even 700,000. But we don't have, you know, millions of dollars and billions of dollars, really, and a cable network behind us pimping it and a campaign apparatus pimping this event. Compare Beto's number, 714,000, to some of the others who've done town halls on CNN. Elizabeth Warren had 1,091,000 viewers, significantly more than little Beto. Cory Booker, who is also an afterthought, although he was more of a star at the time of his town hall, had 929,000 viewers. Now, for CNN, these numbers are huge. For CNN, these are all good numbers. But for Democrats, they're bad numbers. Amy Klobuchar had 869,000. She had several million when she was on Fox News. But again, we're talking about CNN. And this is the kicker. John Hickenlooper, the governor of Colorado, the former governor of Colorado, who is also running for president, although you would never know it, his town hall on CNN had 745,000 viewers. That means that Beto O'Rourke had less viewers for his town hall than a guy named John Hickenlooper, who nobody'd ever heard of. You talk about the shine being off the apple, the bloom being off the rose. Soon, Beto is going, well, he'll make the first debate stage because you only need 65,000 donors nationwide, and he's easily gotten that, although if you gave those people a chance to get their money back, I don't think it would work out super well for little Beto. But he has fallen. It reminds me of 2004, if anybody out there remembers 2004. Howard Dean was the nominee. It was settled. He had tapped into new media. This was when the internet and politics was new. There was no Facebook, there was no Twitter, but he had used blogging and everything that was available at the time in 2004 to really get out there and get people excited about Howard Dean. He was cheered and celebrated and loved by the media. And then about 3 weeks before the Iowa caucuses, the shine came off the rose on that one as well. And they started getting a little bit more critical coverage. People paid more attention to what Howard Dean was saying. And they realized that he was actually crazy. And he is. He's clinically insane, I think. So he lost the Iowa caucuses. He was supposed to win. He lost. And then there was the infamous, yeah, scream. And that was it. It was the end of it. But if you had followed the news for the 6 weeks leading up to the Iowa caucuses, you would have thought that Howard Dean was unbeatable. He was untouchable. There was nothing going to stand in his way. And then the wheels came off. That's what's happening to Beto. It's just happening long before anybody ever cast a vote. There's a possibility, of course, that Beto could put the wheels back on the wagon and make a little soapbox derby run at respectability. But it mostly looks like it's over. Now, just cast your mind back to when Beto was the rock star. He was the golden boy. He was born to run. That was what he told Vanity Fair. I was born for this. No, he wasn't. He's an incredibly unaccomplished dingus who sounds like Napoleon Dynamite had a kid with Butthead. He convulses on stage. He actually stands for nothing and understands less. This is a demonstration of the power of the media. As much as conservatives love to poo-poo the media, well, the media is just a joke and they're biased. Yes, they are biased. Yes, they are a joke. That doesn't mean they aren't powerful. This is why you can't dismiss them out of hand. Andrew Breitbart, a dear friend of mine, used to always talk about he wanted to destroy the liberal media, but he didn't want to beat them out of existence. He wanted to destroy them by exposing them and beating them at their own game. He said you can't ignore them. You have to beat them. And this is an example of the power that they have and why that power has to be challenged and how and why it has to be defeated. You can't just bury your head in the sand and say, I'm not going to watch cable news. I'm not going to pay any attention to it. Doesn't matter if you're not paying attention to it. It doesn't matter if you go see a movie or you don't go see a movie or you don't watch a particular TV show. What matters is those things exist. And you should, in order to successfully engage in the culture war, you have to be aware of what's going on in the culture. You can't bury your head in the sand and think that you've somehow won a victory. I get you don't want to watch CNN or you don't want to watch some crappy cop show. I get your emails, some crappy cop show where some character goes off about how Donald Trump is ruining everything. I get it. I don't want to watch that crap either. But you got to be aware of it because people who aren't political are watching it. They are getting these sort of indoctrination by a thousand cuts. Being ignorant of it doesn't make it not happen. The only way to make it not happen is to defeat it, destroy it, decimate it, not get it off the air. It'll be like whack-a-mole. Another show doing the same crap will pop up, and it won't change anything. You've got to change people's minds, not what they watch on TV. Speaking of minds being changed, oh, you'd never know it by watching them now, but remember when the media was in love with Michael Avenatti? Oh, my goodness. He was constantly in the back of a black SUV being shuttled from CNN to MSNBC and back again. When not appearing on The View, Good Morning America, The Today Show, The CBS Morning Show, so on and so forth. There was nothing that he would not go on, except for Fox News, because he was a coward, where they were praising him. They were loving him because he was the guy who was going to take out Donald Trump. He was going to run for president. There were people seriously thinking he would be the Democratic Party's nominee. Well, he could actually still be. I mean, what the hell? Considering the field that they have, it's wide open. But he's run into a bit more trouble. He's been accused of stealing hundreds of thousands of dollars, using forgeries, using fake signatures from Stormy Daniels, no less, his porn client. The fall just keeps on getting deeper for this guy. He's facing over 400 years in prison for all the alleged crimes that he's been now charged with. It really is amazing. Over at the Vanity Fair, just this opening couple of lines here, talking about where the law offices of Nike are. And the writer says, less than a week earlier, Avenatti had contacted the athletic apparel giant and offered it a hard bargain. One of his clients, a youth basketball coach, was alleging that Nike had paid high school basketball players. The allegations on their own would be explosive, but weaponized by Avenatti in a media war in the midst of earnings season and March Madness, they could pose an existential threat to Nike, as he'd made clear to the company's attorney, according to prosecutors. It wouldn't have been an existential threat, but it would have done damage. Says the company will die, he told the lawyer. Not die, he clarified, but they are going to incur cut after cut after cut, and that's going to happen as soon as this becomes public. Then she writes, and this is where it gets interesting, and this is what Michael Avenatti, one of the things that Michael Avenatti was charged with, this is the extortion charge. But Avenatti had offered them some options. If the company agreed to pay his client $1.5 million and hire him to conduct an internal investigation, he would keep the whole thing quiet. Or, and he wanted $20 million, or for $22.5 million, quote, full confidentiality, and we ride off into the sunset, he offered. That's in quotes. That means that's what Michael Avenatti said. Otherwise, what's going to happen is going to snowball, he told them. Every time we get more information, that's going to be in the Washington Post, the New York Times, ESPN, a press conference. He knew exactly that he could manipulate the press to damage Nike. Whether the allegations are true or not is irrelevant. He knew he could do damage to Nike because he'd learned how the press works. If you are in their good graces, there is absolutely nothing they won't cover that you do. They will give you their microphone. As long as he was seen as the point man of attacking Donald Trump, he was their hero. They thought he pooped gold, and they would put him on his show to spew absolutely anything, anytime he had anything to say. He knew that he could get on TV. Nike knew that he could get on TV. Nike also knew that they could talk to prosecutors and get this stuff on record and really screw Michael Avenatti, and that's what they ended up doing, is Avenatti's arrogance that ultimately took him down. But now he's accused of stealing upwards of $300,000 from Stormy Daniels, including sending a letter with her alleged forged signature on it, directing her literary agent to give him something in the neighborhood of $180,000 of her advance, which would be a nice advance. If somebody wants to advance me that kind of money for a book, I've got some ideas. But he stole it from her. That's what the prosecutors are now alleging. He says that he was owed this money, that he did millions of dollars worth of legal work on her behalf. I'm not sure how you get millions of dollars for filing a couple of lawsuits and then appearing on television constantly. I'm not sure that sitting for an hour with Anderson Cooper and Don Lemon, while probably torturing a violation of the Geneva Conventions, I'm not really sure how that's billable hours. And he did do a lot of TV, but I'm not sure he did that much TV. But he says he's entitled to that money because he thinks he's entitled to everything. But just for fun, it's what's really funny is, by the way, the charges now stemming from allegedly stealing money from Stormy Daniels. For that charge, he's facing 69 years for the charges involving Stormy Daniels. This is proof positive that God has a sense of humor, a wicked sense of humor. Anyway, for gits and shiggles, I want to play you something that I've played you before on the show, but it's worth reminding after this massive fall from favoritism. Remember, he was not only going to take out Donald Trump, he was going to take out Brett Kavanaugh. He's the one who brought the woman forward who said that Brett Kavanaugh was running gang rape parties at 15 years old with no proof whatsoever, nothing to back it up. Everybody said this woman was crazy, but he was all over cable news as if he had just gotten this story carved into a stone tablet from a burning bush from high atop a mountain. So we'll get in the Wayback Machine one more time. I can't say it's the last time because I suspect when these court cases come up, we'll probably want to revisit this. But we'll get into the Wayback Machine one more time to remind you just how slobbering the love affair with Michael Avenatti was before he was exposed as the fraud. Everybody who is not the people you hear in these videos and or a fan of them knew him to be all along.
He's Donald Trump's worst nightmare, Michael Avenatti.
Joining us once again is Michael Avenatti.
Let's bring in Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti. Michael Avenatti.
Michael Avenatti, thank you very much.
He's out there saving the country.
Don Meacham says he may be the savior of the republic.
You are something of a folk hero now.
I owe Michael Avenatti an apology. I've been saying enough already, Michael. I've seen you everywhere. What do you have left to say? I was wrong, brother. You have a lot to say.
I am just dying to hear what you think.
These people all like you.
I'm the only person right here Donald Trump fears more than Robert Miller.
We think you guys are the tip of the spear that's going to take down Donald Trump.
Michael Avenatti's a beast.
Okay, that's true.
And
he's a beast.
He's a beast.
I hand it to her, and I hand it to Michael Avenatti.
But he has a great, bigger calling here, that being a lawyer is minimal compared to what he's doing.
No one has talked tougher directly to Donald Trump on TV than Michael Avenatti, and Donald Trump is afraid to mention his name.
That's fascinating. Donald Trump is terrified of Michael Avenatti.
He gives Trump a run for his money more than anybody else, Michael Avenatti.
An existential threat to the Trump presidency.
The Democrats could learn something from you. You are messing with Trump a lot more than they are.
He has no doubt created sheer panic in Donald Trump's very fragile mind.
Michael Avenatti is laying down the law as guest co-host. And is he really thinking about running for president?
One reason why I'm taking you seriously as a contender is because of your presence on cable news.
You look at the field of Democrats right now, and Avenatti's the one who stands out.
If they decide they value a fighter most,
yes,
people would be foolish to underestimate Michael Avenatti.
I have always said that they need a fighter.
Look, I mean, we're going to continue to use the media. I think we've used it with great success.
And now he's facing more than 400 years for all manner of corruption. Anything you can possibly imagine, it seems like this guy did. Oh boy, howdy. He was the Democratic savior because they look for their savior in government. They look for their savior in courts. Oh, good Lord. Finally today, I just want to play you this little clip from the CBS morning show. There has been a rash of people in the UK, they've got a big European Parliament vote coming up. People in the UK throwing things at conservative candidates. Nigel Farage is the latest person to have a milkshake thrown at him, and they're calling it, it's milkshaking. They're laughing about it. They giggle about it, and you're going to hear that sort of playful attitude about this from CBS News. Imagine Nancy Pelosi has a meatloaf thrown at her, or a Coke, or a milkshake thrown at her. Any Democrat, Barack Obama, if somebody had done something like this to Barack Obama, or Pete Buttigieg, or Joe Biden, now get something dumped on them because the media is embracing the concept. Do you think that they would laugh this way? Do you think that they would joke this way if it had been one of their fellow travelers who had been assaulted like this?
Protesters in Britain have weaponized the milkshake. In the latest in a series of attacks on right-wing politicians, Brexit Party leader Nigel Farage was doused with a milkshake yesterday. That was actually salted caramel, if anyone's wondering. He was campaigning. These attacks have come to be known as milkshaking. Now, this follows egging, it follows pieing, there's punching. Yeah. I don't know, put some of that energy. I'm sure it feels great. I'm sure people love the feeling, and the pictures fly around the world. But put some of that energy into campaigning. Yeah. Maybe the people you don't want to be in office won't be in office.
And maybe just drink the milkshake.
I'm sure it feels great to go ahead and assault somebody out there. And there are think pieces out there in liberal rags justifying this. Don't get all worked up about somebody throwing a milkshake on people. It's no big deal. It's just a bit of fun. What are you going to do? It's a protest. People have a right to protest. Well, in the UK, you don't have a right to be critical of certain people because that's hate speech, and they've outlawed that, and you can go to jail for tweets. But if you want to throw something at somebody, knock yourself out. Who cares? And this is the American media laughing about it. Imagine if a Democrat had something thrown at them. You know, they throw in there, first it was eggs, and then it was this, and now it's punches and milkshakes. And they're all just equating it as if it's all just in good fun. It's all just in good fun. Remember James Hodgkinson, the Bernie Sanders progressive leftist, who was a big fan of the mainstream media, who bought all their garbage about Republican health care plans are going to kill people. He picked up a gun and tried to murder as many Republicans as possible. It starts somewhere, doesn't it? And now we're getting just the CBS. These are the people who, when Donald Trump says the fake news is the enemy of the people, not the news, not the media, the fake news, the people who lie are the enemy of the people. They all collectively clutch their pearls and say, this is an affront to the First Amendment and a threat to all of us. And he's going to lead a journalist getting hurt. They're making light of an actual physical assault. It doesn't matter with what. A milkshake today, a brick tomorrow, a fist again. It's all the same because the left doesn't actually care what happens to people who aren't of the left. They cheer it. They joke about it. They say things like, I bet that felt good. Wish that could have been me. These people are, what's the word I'm looking for? Oh, yes, evil. Yes, yes, they are. And a shame. They should be shamed. They should be run out of the business, but they control the business. Ratings don't matter. Success doesn't matter. Honesty doesn't matter. It's all about pushing the agenda. Agenda über alles. And I use the German deliberately. That is all the time we have for today. It's Thursday. That means tomorrow's Friday. That means you're that much closer to a 3-day weekend, which is going to rock, ladies and gentlemen. And on Monday's show, if you have one of the past interviews that we've done that you'd like me to include in the sort of Monday best of, email me, Derek at Daily Caller, with your suggestions. I won't be able to do all of them. There's, you know, file size limits of what I can upload. But I can maybe include some of it, or maybe some of the bits. Maybe I'll do some of the songs that I put together, because it kind of pisses me off that I spend a long time cutting these songs together with these clips, and then they're really only good once. So maybe we'll do a kind of a greatest hits along with the interviews. I don't know. I'm open to suggestions. Please share this and tell a friend. Rate and review on iTunes. Spread the word. We're approaching 600 star ratings and 200 written reviews and all that. I appreciate each and every one of you. I read all of them quietly to myself. So please keep doing that. And please have a great Thursday. Friday is almost here. 3-day weekend just ahead. See you tomorrow.
Now, this follows egging. It follows pieing. There's punching. I don't know. Put some of that energy. I know. I'm sure it feels great. I'm sure people love the feeling.